Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, it is a beautiful day in Travis County. You couldn't ask for more than a nice breeze and the sun in the sky. That's a good time to kick back, remove any bad juju, take stock, and make sure you get a good read on things. How are you doing, Mahomes? My homie?
That's very well done. That was very well done. Bravo on the intro, sir. Gotta give you the props for that one. Honestly, I am doing fine. Like, I am good. I guess as good as you can be following a loss. Like, obviously, would have loved to have seen the Eagles pull things off. But you lose to Patrick Mahomes, you tip your cap. You lose to Andy Reid, former Eagle. I'm cool. Like, I feel like I would feel a lot worse about the loss if this was Sean McDermott and Josh Allen, and I don't have beef with either one of them, but like, consider there's no attachment there at all. Like, if I would have lost to, if the loss was to the Bills, or if it was to the Bengals, or if it was anyone else besides the Chiefs in the AFC, I'd probably be like, dang, that really sucks. But it's like, all right, 15's insane, and Andy Reid gets another ring. Like, I'm okay.
The Bills just at home taking the straight, and you mad at the Burrow.
No stray intended. Like, my general point is that if it was another team aside from the Chiefs and the game plays out the way it does, then I'm like really upset about the call and the fumble and et cetera, et cetera. Like, those events stink, but it's Andy Reid's Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's fine.
It was a halftime performance. I get it.
I see. Was a quality halftime performance. But all right, unless you have more trolling to do, we can dig right into the news portion of the program. We start with some WNBA news. We had a four-team trade coming through over the weekend, which confused me, but we'll get into it. Chicago Sky getting Marina Mabry in a sign-and-trade, as well as a 2024 second-round pick from the Phoenix Mercury. The Mercury getting Mikayla Onyedwede, a 2024 third-round pick from the Sky, a 2025 second-round pick from the Sky. The Wings got Diamond DeShields, the number 5 overall pick of this year's draft from the Sky, a 2024 first-round pick from the Sky, and the rights to swap first-round picks in 2025 with the Sky. And the Liberty got the rights to Leonie Fibich, a 2024 second-round pick from the Sky, and the rights to swap first-round picks in 2025 with the Mercury. Steve, where do you start with a deal like this?
Marina in Chicago intrigues me. I kind of go back to our first WNBA free agency pod with the one, the only Mark Schindler of everything. And I asked about like patience, like how patient can you be in this league? You kind of got to retool on the fly. We had a bunch of questions about the Sky, and apparently they're like, hey, we have to do something. I don't know if bottoming out in the W has the same effect as many people may think or understand. Especially with more and more talent just coming together. This league is already deep and competitive enough. It's clear Chicago is trying to pivot to something. You mentioned, okay, how do they keep Copper? I think adding Marina is a step to at least, hey, we got something. We're trying to do something here. We can't fall too far behind or else, you know, it's a bad look. So that was my biggest thing. I'm intrigued by the fit. There's a tweet for everything. So obviously... Khalil Copper saying, I like Marina Mabry. Get to a bucket, Scrappy. Ain't going to let you talk no trash to her. Was hilarious. 2 years later, now you're teammates. But that was my main takeaway. Okay, well, we at least have a vision that Chicago is trying to add something on the fly and kind of pivot a little bit as opposed to waves arms wildly. Where were you at with it?
I was intrigued with the fits, period, in this deal. The Liberty portion was mostly just clearing some caps so they can continue to retool their roster. Though Mikayla, 2021 Rookie of the Year, very good defensive player, still figuring some things out on the offensive end. Like, that's going to be interesting to see how she slots into Phoenix. But naturally, my eyes go to what the Sky received in Marina Mabry. And my immediate thought was they must have really liked her play in the non-Arike minutes and really feel like there's another leap coming. And that with more on-ball refs to say, hey, this is yours. You get to run this offense, period. then there's a star turn waiting. I am hesitant to get there, but the blend of playmaking, the way she is able to attack scramble defenses, if you kind of parlay that to the rim pressure that Kalia Copper provides, like I can at least see how they got there. But then you back out of that, and it's like you just mortgaged the next 3 years of drafting for Marina Mabry. You have to be sure that not only does she help you keep Kalia Copper there, but you have to be sure that she actually makes the star turn. If she's just good in Chicago, considering how stacked the 2024 draft is supposed to be, how stacked the 2025 draft is supposed to be, and I would imagine even some of the willingness to give up those picks is that, hey, even if this pick ends up being like 5 or 6, we can still get a good player. So like maybe that's part of the calculus, but that's a lot for Marina. And for the Wings to get that pick haul, I'm impressed. And I do think full offseason for Diamond the Shields, I think she'll play better than what we saw last season. I also am just curious about the fit with her and the Wings in general. I just really worry about the spacing with Dallas. And we still have the entire offseason to go. And we'll see what Latricia Tramble has in mind for this team. I think it's very much going to be a team that leans on defense. That seems to be the vibe she's going with. But even that brings questions to my mind, considering who all is going to be in that starting lineup. So I remain confused on the on-court product with the Wings right now. We just have to see it, see how the offseason plays. But that's kind of where I need to go. That's a lot for Marina, and Diamond is good, but does she slot in seamlessly with this group?
Well, I mean, it's the Wings. We still don't know what they really want to do, but I can assume we're going to see some drives, some defense, and some duck-ins.
Yeah, you can bank that in. There will also be lots of bodies while those things are happening, I would imagine, based on who's projected to start for them. I am intrigued. That is a star package for Marina.
You seem stunned by this.
I am. As this
Marina can't hoop.
She very much can hoop. But in this deal, Chicago gave up their first in the next 3 years. Their first order swap rights in the first. Second, third, like, they literally mortgaged most of their drafts for the next 3 years. That's where I'm just like, yo. Like, I understand how it sounds, but, like, I genuinely don't mean this as a Marina thing. But I would imagine that kind of package would be, hey, we want Skylar Diggins-Smith. Like, not that Marina can't make the star turn, but when I see that kind of package, I'm thinking, okay, we are getting an established star here to make a push, not someone that very well could make a star turn. But I don't, that's kind of where I go. We'll just have to see it.
I would just counter, maybe they like the fit next to Copper and they know, okay, we lost everybody. We can't lose that as well. So we'll figure out the draft later. Not the best thought process, but I'm just throwing out a counter.
I got you. I guess, again, we will see how Chicago is able to build from here. Still have some moves to go. It's been a solid offseason for them in light of who they've lost, but we'll see if that ends up being good enough. On the free agency side, Mariah Jefferson signed with the Phoenix Mercury, so they clearly weren't done with their moves. Averaged 11-5 last year, shot 47% from three with the Lynx last season. How do you feel about the fit with Mariah in Phoenix?
I love that fit. I think she is a sneaky upside player. With the playmaking she can bring, I think it will specifically help Phoenix in general. I know we don't know all of what's going to be on their roster, but that's some steadiness that they probably could have used last year. So I'm just intrigued with that fit and how it really kind of just blends all together.
I got you. If the shooting continues to hold for Mariah, I think it's going to be huge for Phoenix. As you said, like, I think they needed another stabilizer in light of some of the injuries and everything else that went on with the team last year. And, you know, I made the reference to Skylar. Like, I don't know if she's actually on the block right now, but there was the trade request last season. She is with child right now. So her availability, at least at the beginning of the season, is kind of up in the air. So we'll see. And so if she's slotted to miss any time, or if it does turn into a, hey, I want to go somewhere else, having someone like Mariah, I think that makes a lot of sense. At worst, that's a really good insurance policy. At best, you just have one of the best backup point guards in the W coming off your bench. So I think that's pretty good stuff for the Mercury. Only other signing to note would be Ileana Rupert, who was waived by the Aces. Not going to go down that road right now, but claimed off waivers from the Atlanta Dream. How do you like that fit for Ileana?
How do you like that fit? You said it was tremendous.
Well, I say it's tremendous. No. But no, I do like the fit, especially with how the Dream like to space out their offense, or how they like to invert their offense. A lot of Cheyenne Parker above the break as a handoff hub. Like, I don't know how much handoff usage we'll see from Ileana, but her floor spacing, I think, is going to help. I think it's going to fit into how the Dream want to attack offensively. So we have to see how much playing time she gets, but seems like a good fit. Also feels like a good developmental fit. She's not going to be in a win now situation. And so in theory, there should just be more playing time for a period. It should be a little bit easier to bring her along. So I like it for both parties.
No, the fit for me was the tempo they play and the spacing she provides and the opportunity. I think that kind of just blends together very well. So I'm intrigued with how much time she gets, but I think you can see the fit. If that shot holds, it's going to be good stuff.
Shot roughly 37% from three last season, so we shall see. We'll slide to the NBA section with a little bit of bad news. Zion Williamson, who has been out for quite a while now with the hamstring injury, has apparently suffered a setback in his recovery. He's going to be out, reevaluated after the All-Star break. Best of luck to Zion. Any thoughts beyond best of luck to Zion?
I mean, I just hope he's able to get back on the court. You know, honestly, just to have a setback is probably worse than him just being out even longer, especially with the hamstring. Those are tricky, and that's a player that plays a lot of force. And this is the Pelicans team that, again, we saw the big flash. They're showing flashes again, but they need some time to have everyone there. And now they're in a scenario where they're going to be up against the clock. So I kind of just want him to get right, and then I want to see what they're able to put together.
Got you. To the buyout market, we've had some news. We touched on it a little bit on the last episode, just some guys that got bought out or on the verge of being bought out, and just kind of exploring some of the potential destinations. We have some signings. Reggie Jackson.
Before you get to Reggie, what do you think about buyouts? Where are you at with the buyout market?
In what context?
In theory. Just do you think that it's big swings, low risk, high reward? How do you view these signings?
They very much feel like, at best, like rotation stabilizing moves. I feel like it's low risk, moderate reward more than high reward. I think the tide can kind of turn on that, depending on what Russell Westbrook looks like. I think he feels like the highest profile buyout guy that we've had on the market in a while. So whenever we figure out, A, when he gets bought out, but two, like where he goes and what his role is going to be, like I think that has the potential to kind of shape my mind on it a little bit. But ultimately, it's a midseason addition. You hope you get a boost at the seventh spot in rotation, eighth spot in rotation. Teams that need one more movement shooter since they already have one, like that kind of thing. So I feel like it's an additive, but I don't know if it's a major needle mover. Where are you at on buyouts?
No, I was going to segue that into you telling me why you don't like Reggie Jackson in Denver.
Oh, here we go. I don't dislike it. But we will start with that one. Reggie Jackson to the Nuggets. Averaging 11 points, 3.5 assists this year, 35% from three. It's been kind of up and down in terms of the role. He has been playing hurt through portions of the year. I don't dislike the fit. I mostly found it funny. If you're alluding to my tweet when the news was announced, I was like, oh, so they trade Bones and then sign. It's just kind of funny that it's the same archetype. It's like it's older Bones, if you're going with the joke. But if Bones being traded was more about the off-court stuff than the on-court stuff, then having someone like Reggie Jackson, who especially at this point of his career has been the I will play whatever role you need me to play guy and has been a good shoulder and is a guy that can maintain your offense off the bench, can carry you for a stretch when you need him to. And so I like the addition. Like, I just found it funny in light of the trade. And then if you're listening to the introductory presser with Bones and I kind of want Nuggets Clippers at some point in the playoffs, I'm going to be honest with you. But no, I dig the Reggie fit. You seem to be immediately higher on it than I am, though. What do you like about the fit?
Well, one, there's a hometown element. I mean, it was Mr. Colorado basketball in 2008, I believe. So that's neat. If you have to get rid of Bones Highland and you're still looking to shore up that second unit and you add Reggie Jackson, I'm all for it. Makes sense. I think there's enough room with the second unit for Denver for him to still do the Reggie things. Mm-hmm. and be a plus there. I'm intrigued. How much does Denver try and do the two guard lineup? Does he impact some of their versatility if he hits? And what does he look like next to Jokic? Is there some cutting that we just haven't seen in years that gets tapped into? How's the shot hold up? Is it easier for him to play? So what's that do? But I just like the idea of Denver adding pieces that may fit their current timeline a little bit more to shore up that second unit. Mm-hmm. So if you're telling me, hey, we're throwing Reggie Jackson and Thomas Bryant in there, I'm intrigued. I don't think he hurts them.
I got you. And like, as we get towards the playoffs, like we've kind of joked about it already. Like if all else fails, it's just going to be more Jamal Murray minutes, which to that point, Jamal Murray has just been cooking for like the last month. He seems to be firmly back. But if all else fails, like he just gets more of those minutes. Jokic just gets more of those minutes. So I think they're going to be fine from a creation point either way. And so this kind of blends into the low risk, moderate reward portion of it because they don't need him to hit. But if he does, you know, Coach Michael Malone can experiment with, hey, I'll rest Jokic and Murray together. I think we are okay with having Aaron Gordon on the floor, having MPJ on the floor, Reggie, Thomas Bryant. You can run spread pick and rolls around those two. Thomas Bryant can roll and pop. And then you have kickouts and guys that can attack from there. And you feel pretty good about what your offense is going to look like. So I do love the idea of this. I think it's a pretty solid signing. We can now go to, let's stay out west. Terrence Ross to the Suns, who we thought was going to sign with the Mavericks, but that turned after a meeting, apparently. How do you feel about the Terrence Ross fit in Phoenix?
Apparently, he felt a lot better about that mix than the Dallas one. For me, I've asked for years, including this one, what does this version of Terrence Ross look like on a good team? And will we ever see it? So now we'll get our answers. I think that his ability to knock down shots is big. I think the depth is big. In theory, you lose Cam Johnson, and this is not a direct replacement. This is not apples to apples, but if you have someone who can space the floor, you can use in movement sets. It just gives you another option. And we've seen the success that Lee has had in Phoenix. We know what Terrence Ross can do as far as scoring the basketball. Does this lead to some more lineup versatility for Phoenix? Who knows? But it's a pretty good signing for a team that just got Kevin Durant.
Yeah, just got to continue to sprinkle that one in like parsley. You know, just Kevin Durant just joining the team. That's pretty cool. Oh, we got Chris Paul, Devin Booker, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, that KD guy's coming. But no, I get it to an extent. I just thought if the Suns were going to go buyout hunting, it would be for like a more defensive wing or someone a little bit more trustworthy there. But the point you make about him being the movement shooter and kind of replacing that element that you lose with Cam Johnson, I think is a really good one. I think it's something that probably deserves a little bit more attention. I wonder what this says about how Phoenix feels about Landry Shamet in the minutes at this point. Not that they can't play together, but I do wonder if that kind of led them to prioritizing Ross a little bit more than a different archetype on the buyout market.
See, I wonder if they want to have someone who can also do Shamet things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So let's have another option just in case the team just tells him to come here a lot in the playoffs, which they could also do to Terrence Ross just by default, but, you know, theory size, all that good stuff. I also, you know, I think defense is the easiest thing to jump on, but I think they really like Torrey Craig and Okogie, like a lot. And so they're just going to be like, hey, y'all do that part. We'll
get the shooting.
Y'all handle that. We'll figure the rest of this out, get some more pieces in there. But you two, it's time to go.
All right. I think that's fair. While we're west, we had another wing move announced earlier today. Justin Holiday getting a buyout from the Houston Rockets, he will be joining the Dallas Mavericks. How do you feel about that fit, good sir?
3-and-D in a good spot to be a 3-and-D guy. I mean, you could say my initial reaction was y'all got Reggie Bullock at home, but I understand if you're Dallas, you want to have more options. You're not going to be able to replace Dorian Finney-Smith, but you do definitely want to have some of that lineup versatility and at least have another piece you can throw out there and say, hey, guard these wings or guard these players and space the floor. I think it's a good fit for him because they don't necessarily need him to pop. He could be a bonus. And he usually does his best work when that's the scenario. I was like, oh, Justin Holiday hit 4 threes in 3 straight games. As opposed to, wait, where's Justin Holiday?
That's probably fair. And to that point, like it, it felt like he was kind of reaching that point in Atlanta, at least early on in the year, just because nobody else was taking three. It's like, okay, well, in your 14 to 15 minutes, we kind of need you to do this now. Because it's really you and AJ. So if you could please knock down these shots, kind sir. In Dallas, I'm with you. I don't think he'll have that same level of pressure on him. It's odd because like I don't think he'll have that pressure in terms of like importance. But also the Mavericks are very much in the playoff hunt with an MVP candidate. So like that inherent pressure is going to be there. So I'm curious to see how that plays. I am very here for him just getting the Tim Hardaway Jr. staggers when he comes in. That's going to be something funny to track.
What do you mean? It's happening right away.
So there you go. So that's going to be fun. But no, I do think that's a pretty solid flyer. On the wing and out east, we have a couple of moves to report. Danny Green going to Cleveland.
How do you feel about that one? Because I think it's a solid move. Again, it's a buyout deal. So, I mean, what's the risk? My thing is like, I want to see what he can bring on both ends of the floor. Because if he can do that to a degree, it makes a lot of sense. Give us some defense, give us some 3-point shooting. We get a little blend of both. The issue is, boy, they still got a lot of options in that wing room. And what is that path going to be for him to get the time, get right, while Cleveland is in this process and kind of finding their way a little bit? That's where I'm just like, how does this mash up? I might be galaxy braining it a little bit, but.
I don't think it's galaxy braining it, especially in light of not only Isaac Okoro just grabbing the starting job full time at this point, but also shooting very well from three. The volume still isn't high, but he looks a lot more comfortable just taking those shots. And again, it would be one thing if he was playing well and Cleveland was playing him like 21, 22 minutes a night still. And then you can still, it's him, it's Chetty, et cetera, et cetera. Now you can just kind of dip those minutes and get Danny out there and slow play it. Like Isaac is just flat out getting starter level minutes, and the defense is very important. And so I don't think it's a galaxy spring thing. I think that's a fair thing to wonder about. I do think in general, Cleveland just probably slow plays it. And if it is a first quarter where Isaac is taking two threes or three threes and he's missed them, maybe he's like, okay, now we can get Danny a run at the end of the first, early second, and see what he looks like. Because ultimately, like, Danny knows how to operate off ball. Like, the shooting is one thing, but just the way he spaces the floor, the random cuts, I think he's going to vibe pretty nicely with what Cleveland ball handlers like to do. And when you have two bigs that can pass the way they do and attract the attention that they do, like, the off-ball movement from Danny is going to be pretty important. Like, we've seen elements of that with the cutting with Isaac Okoro, but the three-point relocation, I think, is just a little bit different. And he's a vet, so I don't doubt that JB would be okay with just throwing him out there if he wants to get a different look. But I think the time's going to be there for Danny.
And I wonder if it's more of a playoff move as well, because he can still shoot that thing. And the defense, you know, it's going to come to a certain level, so maybe this is something, okay, if we need this, we have this back here. Still play it, and then we have more options come playoff time in case, you know, we need it.
Yeah. So, again, low risk, moderate reward. We're sticking with the theme of the buyout signings. Last signing to confirm is the Sixers picking up Dwayne Dedman to add to the center room.
Gosh, this would be such a delightful thing to have a bit about. The only issue is you tapped out on Dwayne Dedman like 3 weeks ago. So I can't have as much fun. And now you're probably just going to pivot to what's wrong with Paul Reed and what is Doc doing. So I can't even really enjoy this moment. I don't know why they did that. They just wanted a tall person, I guess. I don't know.
Like,
they want the Miami playbook.
I understand the move in theory. I do think outside of Joel Embiid, and I guess PJ Tucker on occasion, but like outside of Joel Embiid largely, this is not a good rebounding team. Dwayne Dedman, provided you keep him in a drop, he will help you do that. He does bring size and strength. I do understand the theory of the signing. However, with what he's looked like this season, and honestly, like towards the end of last season as well,
honestly, you can keep going.
Okay.
You can go back about 3, 4, 5.
All right. I'm not letting you erase the good Dwayne Dedman stretch. I was on the bandwagon for a reason. when he was playing well, I let you hear about it. And when he stopped, then, you know, you also let me hear about it. And I was like, oh, okay, so this isn't just a bad stretch. This is done now. All right, bet. It's big Lando season in Miami. So, no. So, considering what he's looked like, I don't think he's going to provide those things enough or provide enough of those things to make this a positive signing. We record twice a week. I'll be here to say I'm wrong if that proves not to be the case. But he just hasn't looked good defensively. And for the occasional stretch element that he can bring offensively, like the shot hasn't really fallen at a high clip. And the volume isn't there to really bend defense like that either. So I think this is ultimately, this feels like a rebounding move. This feels like, okay, Montrez is not doing the thing defensively. Paul Reed, we can't trust him. I know Dwayne is going to box out and help us get boards. And if he's in the second unit and Tyrese is still in the second unit, he can end possessions for us. He will give the ball to Tyrese Maxey, and Tyrese Maxey will get us points or easy shots. And that might just be enough for 8 to 10 minutes. I would imagine like that's the thinking. They don't need him to be backup center of the year. He just needs to be more reliable than the two guys that they have. I think you try to find a better center to make that gamble with, but I at least understand why they're trying to make the gamble. Other news, don't have signings yet, but Stanley Johnson and the Spurs agreeing to a buyout. Patrick Beverley and the Magic have agreed to their buyout. We still don't know where Beverley's going. I don't think we've talked about Stanley Johnson yet. Any spot you would like to see him with?
I just want to see him get to a place where he can play basketball. Can we find him a home? Like, it feels like he keeps producing, and the team's like, we're good. Like, where'd he shoot from three for San Antonio?
Yeah, like, north of 40% from three. Like, the only bad thing I have to say about the Stanley, like, well, let me not say that, because I don't know if there's, like, deeper meaning. I was going to make, like, a jersey number joke. But again, I don't know what's behind that. But beyond that, like, no, he's defended hard. Drives have hit, like, you know, the finishing in the half court is different, but drives have hit and he shot well. I'm with you. Like, I would like to see him just find a spot. And it's like, hey, here are these 14 minutes a night. Here are these 16 minutes a night. Go wreck some stuff defensively.
It's the NBA is such a cruel business sometimes. Like, really, do you see the person figure it out? And then it's like, oh, well, I mean, good job.
That's cool and all, but
I got an idea for you, man.
What's up?
What about Miami?
That feels like a Miami Flyer, honestly. They will absolutely play that man at the four. Like, I feel like he's more like physically capable of blocking minutes at the four than Caleb, even though Caleb's a better player overall. That feels, you know what?
Taha.
You know what? You might be cooking with something. Hold on. He just feels like a Heat signing.
Watch Washington get him.
Oh God. you need you for the play in stretch, you know?
Ooh, I have a second one for you. Ready?
Okay.
Well, probably not anymore. Atlanta question mark? I mean, they just got Sadiq Trey, so.
Yeah, which I guess on the news front, like the 14 trade was pushed through. That is happening after a hiccup of sorts, comma, question mark. I have Hall emoji. Shrug emoji. Monocle emoji. There was a lot going on there.
Ooh, that got messy quick.
Yeah. Not even respectfully. That was just, hey, no, what kind of operation y'all running up there? I was like, wait a minute.
But here's the thing, though. I know we're off topic. How did mess happen? And then the agent was like, nah, that didn't happen. And then Josh Hart's like, nah, they're great in Portland. And I'm like, wait, what's happening?
I'm just like, the Josh Hart thing is what got me. Because, like, with the agent thing, I was like, I don't think the agent puts that out there without the players okay. And then I reread the statement, and I was like, this is worded in a way that could be interpreted a different way. I was like, no, he didn't take shots for that. And I was like, So you're not saying he didn't take the, I see. But the Josh Hart thing is like, oh, okay. That's not random.
Hey, can I be respectfully messy?
Of course.
Is this the best distraction from the person you traded? Look at that. Can you believe it?
Oh, no.
No, we're going to do it. We're going to do it, guys. I can't believe we have to, but we're going to do it.
Fine. We'll take them back. But y'all need to look into what's going on up there. The number two overall pick from a couple years ago was traded to the Detroit Pistons for to clear some depth off the Amex card. You know, it's cool. Anyway.
We're going to get in trouble.
we are here. Gonna just put that entire segment on the Patreon. It's going to be fun. Let's normally we would go into teams that impressed, et cetera, et cetera. We do have some teams to note there. But first, we've had a lot of movement over the last few days. Trade deadline just passed on Thursday. We've had some debuts from the players that have been moved to different teams. So let's take a look at some of the guys that have stood out. Some of the teams that stood out. Steve, who's caught your eye among the new faces and new places?
Well, let's chat about it. Let me talk to you. Let's talk about Dallas. So the Kyrie Irving addition, I thought we hit a lot of the key points when that trade went down. And it was kind of an interesting kind of deal where Luka was just out the first two games.
Yeah.
Which kind of helped because now you can kind of see, okay, what's this look like? Because in theory, it's easy to say Kyrie's going to boost those non-Luka lineups. But now you can see very quickly and very earlier, oh, there's more off-ball movement. Oh, he definitely adds a piece there. Even if it's not a ton of complex actions, even if it's the same stagger or a stagger with a curl or dribble handoff action, he's coming off screens. He's cutting. Pass and cut is huge, by the way. He's adding a movement element for Dallas that they didn't quite have. He has a different tempo too, and he brings a different pressure, which opens things up. That was the biggest thing for me. And then as I was watching the two games without Luka, I was like, wow. So they have a second person that defenses have to lock in on. Like they actually do. So seeing Kyrie against the Clippers able to get two on the ball, get in the paint, force help. Now Dallas is back in their scramble situations where they're moving the ball, driving and kicking. It's like, oh, Luka does that all the time. They now have a second person who could do that. Huh. That's different. That's going to give you a little more synergy lineup wise. You can still run some of the same stuff, get some of the same concepts. And we don't have to have the same question we had last year. Where it's like, okay, what happens when Luka's out in the playoffs? How are you guys generating pressure? Which was like 98% of my Mavs content last year. Sorry.
It was important. Rim pressure is important.
And then I think seeing the difference once Luka got back in action against the Kings, the blend works out better than I thought. Because you can, and this is something I underrated, you can always get to the Luka stuff. Always. Pick and roll, post up, however it is, you can always get to it. Now you have another element on top, and it's just tougher to deal with. I think a really sneaky part of this deal is the boost they've gotten in transition. And not just because of Kyrie, Josh Green is pushing it too. He gets rebound, he's out of there. But Kyrie can push. They can throw it ahead. Early in the Kings game, there's a trailer three from Luka in transition, which is much different from the transition of, okay, we have the ball. Where's Luka?
Wait a minute. I was about to say, what transition? They grabbed the board. Luka jogging up there. It's different. Go ahead.
Add the drum noise. Like there were a few times in that Kings game where the ball was ending up in Luka's hands, not started by Luka. He's getting the end game. He's going to catch and shoot. He's driving closeouts off of something else that's been created. And I was like, ah, I'm intrigued. Having Kyrie and Luka as both play starters and play finishers with the pressure that Kyrie generates, with the pressure that Luka puts on teams, it's not even just him being on the weak side by himself. Just the fact that he's on the weak side, he can make decisions. He can attack those scrambler defenses. It might be a shot, might be a drive, might be an extra pass, but that's a different element for Dallas where it's been like, okay, they can create these openings. What are they going to do with it? Now it's like, oh, we're helping off of him. And now he's got the ball. And you kind of saw that blend a little bit. And then kind of you still had Luka getting to his matchup hunting, getting to his post-ups. But the one thing, and I'm sure you'll like this, they kept Kyrie one pass away. Look at you nodding, your favorite thing. And
don't call me out.
Sorry. Fourth quarter, there was one possession. Kyrie was at the top of the key. Luka was back and hurt her down. De'Aaron Fox comes to double. And Luka literally just back dribbles, kind of like that electric slide Neil from the big game.
Yeah.
So Luka just back dribbles and he's holding. Kyrie pulls over to the wing. He gets open look. I think he missed it, but it's like, we can really put some teams in a bind with this as well. So, you know, I'm interested to see how much they go to Luka screening for Kyrie and vice versa. They did it, I think, once against the Kings, and it was a switch, but Luka popped out to catch it, and I was like, I get it, but also there's some elbow pressure that you guys could generate, but it's one game. Defense. Keep an eye on it. Now, I have a theory that I'm trying to workshop because the activity from Dallas has been pretty good during this stretch. And I have a theory that somehow when they're worse defensively, they end up being more active because they have no choice, which helps them their defense actually be better, even if they don't have the personnel. We'll keep an eye on it. I might take an L on that one. Threw some zone looks out there. What gets tricky is, okay, what happens when Kyrie and Luka are on the weak side together? Mm-hmm. And one of them has the help and one of them has the sink and they both have to recover. And then you add in Christian Wood potentially being the big in pick and roll. And it's like, And then you add in a couple times where the Kings kind of put Luka on the weak side by himself. And I was like, interesting. So keep an eye on that. But yeah, it's about everything I thought it would be.
All right. Well, that's good stuff, first and foremost. On the defense front, like, I think that is going to be interesting to watch, especially Luka. Like, I think his defensive effort has just improved since he's gotten into the league, especially the last year and a half. But even with that improvement, it's not the first effort with Luka anymore. Like, it's very much the second effort or the third effort. And so I think that's where it can get into, okay, he may peel in early enough, he may make the closeout, but if that guy drives him, is he able to stay attached? Does he get help? And then are they able to play out of that? That's going to be interesting to see. I'm glad you brought up the screening point. I think it was Luka screening for Kyrie, like late in the second quarter and getting that post up. Kyrie only screened for Luka once, I think, in that game. I thought we would get a little bit more usage out of that, especially late in the game, but Kyrie was just cooking at that point. And so I can understand why, like, what am I sitting screens for? Give me the rock. And then that overtime just got crazy for everyone involved. So we'll keep an eye on that. On the one pass away thing, one, you called me out for nodding. But two, I was nodding, not because it's my favorite thing, but that's something that I want to bounce off of. I think that's where you really see the difference between Jalen Brunson versus Spencer Dinwiddie versus Kyrie. Because in theory, if they're just spaced somewhere or just spaced one pass away, in theory, you kick it to them, either of those guys can knock down spot up shot, either of those guys can drive. The off-ball relocation aspect that Kyrie brings is just different than both Jalen and Spencer. For Jalen, I think better shooter than Spencer, doesn't have the same gravity. And Spencer just doesn't have the gravity Kyrie does. And Spencer doesn't bring the same movement style that I would say Jalen doesn't bring the same movement style off ball. Spencer doesn't have the gravity. And Kyrie has both. And I think that makes it even more dangerous to place him one pass away from anything Luka is doing. Because that can just flow into Kyrie Luka pick and roll, Kyrie calling someone else, Kyrie just catching and shooting, Kyrie relocating and then shooting, Kyrie relocating and driving. And then that just kicks off a chain depending on how quickly Dallas gets to their stuff, which to that point, late in games for Dallas, I do want to see what their tempo is going to be like, because I think they are very much a we will walk it up. Luka will just pick out whoever he wants to attack and then play out of that. I think with Kyrie, they don't have to fly around offensively, but I do think there's going to be more incentive for them to play a little bit faster at the end of games. Not dramatically so, but just so that they can play out of the Luka thing and give Kyrie the full range to really attack and further bend the defense. I think that's another element to watch with Dallas late in game. But beyond that, you pretty much nailed it. Any other team or player that you wanted to hit on?
Now, this is for you. The Nets. The hipster Nets are back.
The hipster Nets.
Yeah, they're back. Everyone loves them. I made a joke before Bridges and Cam Johnson debuted. Give it a week and a half, and one of your favorite basketball people is going to talk about how they enjoy the Nets like it's a Paramore album. Y'all did it in the first half of game one. I've never tapped the sign so quick in my life.
Oh, I saw that tweet and I was like, man, I really did say I enjoyed the net. That's crazy. Like verbatim. That's crazy. You call your shot, you call your shot. I can't even hate on that one.
Hey, you gotta know your personnel. And I also joke there's a net someone somewhere saying that they traded for Cam Thomas, Joe Harris, and Ben Simmons as well, which is interesting because, you know, Ben Simmons looks a little more comfortable at times. Even in the Chicago game, he's directing traffic. And I was like, wait, when's the last time this man did that?
He's active. And
yeah, Joe Harris has made 12 threes in the last two games for Brooklyn. He had 8 for the whole month before that.
Yikes. I feel like of those 12, like what, did 8 of them come in the second quarter of some sort? It's funny. He just like picks the quarter like, it's my turn.
Yes. So I like what they bring to the table. The depth intrigues me, honestly. Obviously, continuing to have that kind of size with that starting lineup is very interesting on both ends of the floor. Being able to bring in Simmons, Royce O'Neal, Joe Harrison off the bench, that's money. But man, that's a lot. Like I was watching the Philly game. That's a lot of size defensively. That's a lot of switching you could do. A lot of pairings where you're like, no, we're good here. And then you have Dorian Finney-Smith flying around. You have Nick Claxton still flying around to protect the rim and clean things up. Offensively, I think you have a sneaky level of versatility. Like tempo and pace are going to be huge for them. And we learned that in that debut game against the Sixers. But they do have a few folks that can be used in different actions. You can space, you can get to drive and kick. A lot of people can push and transition. Pick and roll isn't a problem. Get your off-ball actions. So it's good stuff there. And the other part with the starting lineup, if you think about it, these are all guys who are used to playing out of like those rotation scenarios. So that could be a sneaky plus. You got two guys from Dallas. You got two guys from Phoenix. I'm pretty sure they know how to get to drive and kick and how to make quick decisions. And what does that look like together? They're fun. Now back to my point, though. They graduated very quickly to the fun team until the fourth quarter. Where it's like, oh, wait, where do we go? It's only one game, but it's a thought bubble. I thought Bridges was very aggressive, and it looks like the reps that he had, it's going to grow. His game is going to continue to grow and blossom, especially with more freedom, a little bit more responsibility, but he doesn't have to really carry the load. And so you saw him driving closeouts. You saw him operating a pick and roll. I just like the fact that the lineup just kind of blends together. The team feels a little deeper. Team feels like they have more of a purpose in a sense.
I feel that. That was a lot nicer to the late game offense than I thought you were going to be. Going to be honest.
It's game one. They all just got there. How are you going to know where to go?
That's true. I thought you were going to get the jokes off on my behalf, but you know that's fine. To the Brooklyn point, though. I'll raise my hand. They are fun. And watching them defensively is because like you see the names and you see the lineups on paper. And it's like, okay, this should be a team that can switch. This should be a team that can kind of erase gaps. This is a team that can kind of sink in, make it difficult for you to dribble. But then to see them put that together and their first matchup is Philly. Now it was Philly on the second night of a back-to-back. I think that makes it maybe 3-5% easier to do what you do and ramp up the activity and force turnovers since it was a roll back to back for them. But it's still Philly. It's still Joel Embiid. It's still James Harden. And so to watch them without much playing time together, I'm not even sure they got a practice in together. If so, it had to be like one. But for that to turn into, okay, I got Harden, I got Embiid. We're going to switch this. Here's the double. We're going to rotate behind that. We're going to kick this guy out. Philly's pace in the half court did not help those matters, but that's neither here nor there. But here's the switch. Here's the double. Here's the rotation. I'm going to kick this guy out of this matchup. We're going to get back matched up. Here we go. Like for them to have that kind of synergy defensively in game one is pretty encouraging to me. I am excited to see how that plays out of that. And I do think because they don't have a star level creator, Spencer's very good. He's not that. Mikhail, we've talked about his growth on ball. Like he's not that yet. Without that, I do think the half court is going to be a little bit of a question mark. But one way to alleviate that is by getting out and running. And if you're able to force turnovers, they're going to be able to cash in on those opportunities. They have a bunch of guys that can thrive in transition, that can fill the lanes and knock down shots from the perimeter, that can just drive, kick, and then kick off that chain. They're going to be fine in transition. And even just pushing off of misses, like I think they're going to be fine flowing into early offense. Like one of the things we talked about with Phoenix when Mikal Bridges was there, they get a miss, it's a kick to Chris Paul. Here's Mikal Bridges setting an early drag screen, 35 feet from the basket and slipping it early. and then being able to play out of that. The Nets don't have a Chris Paul, but all of their wings are willing screeners. Like, you can get that kind of dynamic from anyone and kind of kept the chain when the defense is already scrambling, trying to get matched up. They're already tilted. I think with the defense tilted, I think these Nets are going to be fine. We're going to have to see what it looks like. We would see a larger sample of what it looks like against a set team defensively. I really want to see this team against switches in the half court because Philly isn't really that.
Do you, though?
I mean,
it's going to be a lot of back out dribble. I'm preparing you now.
You're not wrong, but you don't have to say it.
Hey, sometimes you got to say the quiet part out loud.
Hey, man, we might get a little bit better. Who's to say? We will see what it looks like. But
honestly, my thing with the fourth quarter offense was less, you know, the talent involved and more, boy, they just lost that pace and tempo. And when you don't have necessarily that star, you got to up the pace a little bit. You got to give yourself as many chances as possible.
Yeah.
I felt like they were kind of swinging for the fences a little bit. And I will ask you this question, right? Is this finally the place that you're going to respect Royce O'Neal as a defender? Because in that Philly game, the luxury here, they've gone from having a bunch of small guards to, oh, we can have Mikal Bridges or Dorian Finney-Smith guard James Harden. And then here comes Royce O'Neal. And, oh, yeah, there's Ben Simmons as well. And Nick Claxton's out here, too. So is this finally where we're going to give him the thumbs up defensively?
No, Royce has always gotten the thumbs up for me. My concern has been with Royce being tasked with, okay, you have to guard this guy. I have consistently said on this pod, I want Royce to be in a situation to where it's like, oh, snap, we got to deal with them and Royce. And this is very much the scenario where you got to deal with Mikal, you got to deal with Ben, you got to deal with Dorian, Royce, Nick, like, they just have a bunch of bodies that you can throw. Like, the benefit of a team like, let's throw out Boston. What makes Boston so dangerous? One, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are really freaking good. But beyond that, if you look at, like, the guard room, you have to put your third best defender on Malcolm Brogdon. You have to put your third best defender on Derek White, who's been insane, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. And so now with Brooklyn, a team's third option now has to be defended by Royce O'Neal. That's not fun for anyone involved. Or their third best scorer may have to face Ben Simmons because he's in a lineup with Mikal Bridges and Dorian Finney-Smith. Like, that's not going to be fun. And that's before getting into what those guys can do in the passing lanes and what they can do as double teams, just the collective length that they have. So I love this for Royce. I think you're going to get a better version of him defensively now. It's because he won't be tasked with the Herculean load he had to carry sometimes in Utah, for example. And that's where a lot of my "I want Royce to have more help" kind of conversation came from. So I'm excited to watch this group defensively. Offensively, we'll see. I'm already pretty confident about them against scrambling defenses, but they have to scramble that defense first. So only one game, we'll see. Anyone else before I go?
I had a couple quick thoughts.
Okay.
On the Knicks and the Blazers. Because I like both of those moves. Josh Hart fitting in with Tibbs is no surprise. I really like the juice that he brought. And again, it feels like a new scenario is going to tap back into some of the flashes that we've seen. And it was funny, he made two threes in his first game with the Knicks. I think he made three total in his last seven games as the Blazer. Ah. So I was like, maybe we got him back. The activity defensively, probably the big thing, especially if it's going to be him and Quickly in the backcourt. That's kind of fun for me. And does he blend into that second unit and also be able to blend in with other lineups? And then my brain just went to, it was intriguing because the help didn't look the same off of Josh Hart, even though he was still the same player. But they played Utah and Utah played Portland and Utah put a big on him. Utah played the Knicks and here's Jordan Clarkson standing next to him. I'm like, this is interesting.
That's different.
And the dynamic of, okay, you're in one spot and in this one spot or team, we have to take something away and you are the thing. And now you go somewhere else and the thought changes. Now we're taking away something else and maybe you have more room to roam. I'm always interested by kind of how that works with the fit and opportunity dynamic. And so I'm intrigued by Cam Reddish in Portland. Small sample size, incredibly. But early in the game against Oklahoma City, he had a cut. On the other end, he had a stunt and recover. He can space the floor, he can get some baskets. So I want to see what that runway looks like. It's always fun to kind of see how much of a rejuvenation you get from some of these players post-trade, and then what happens when things kind of settle in. And so I want to see how much of that he kind of soaks up, or was that maybe just like a I'm excited to be here type of deal. So that'll be fun. And lastly, I got to talk about Mike Conley.
Oh, of course.
And the one thing that jumps off to me is Mike doesn't have to have the ball. You can still have Kyle Anderson or Anthony Edwards working on ball, pushing it in transition, and you can work to get it to Mike. And he's making quick decisions. And when he's in these dribble handoffs or coming off screens, he'll make a quick decision to keep the offense flowing. It doesn't have to be the centerpiece. And I like that because that's not just going to unlock Rudy as a roller. It's going to hold defenses to Rudy as a roller, which can now open up the kicks and you can continue to play out of it that way. And hopefully that should kind of loosen things up for them as far as some of the play out of the play type possessions. But those are all my new thoughts on the new faces.
Okay, I got you. I guess I will start with the Lakers. I will say off rip, like I definitely want to see them with a healthier unit, i.e. I would like to see them with LeBron. So just I'll have a better feel for, A, what the offense is going to look like, but beyond that, just what the actual lineups are going to be. And I say that first because I wanted to start with D'Angelo Russell. And the first thing that popped for me as I turned the game on, I didn't watch the game live, but as I turned that game on, first thing I see is he's on Klay Thompson. He's chasing Klay Thompson around screens. How do we think that's going to go? Klay did not shoot well, but those reps did not look great. And so I would imagine when LeBron's back, I think we get a better sense of what their starting line is going to be and, more importantly, what the defensive matchups are going to be and what player types are going to be defending who. I think we get a cleaner sense on that front. But beyond that, I already feel like the D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Davis pick and roll is going to be a good one. Just the pacing of D'Lo as a ball handler, I think, vibes well with what Anthony Davis wants to do. The passing ability itself, I think he'll be able to hit Anthony Davis in the pocket a little bit earlier. That'll give AD some time to flow in the mid-range. He'll have a couple of dribbles if he catches it early enough, be able to attack downhill, get some more free throw attempts. I think that's going to be a pretty fruitful pairing. And then you can already just kind of see the value of how D'Lo moves off the ball as well. Just random relocations, just his spacing in general, I think it's going to help open up the floor for the other Lakers to operate with. Him being able to act as a connector in the half court if Dennis Schroeder is kicking off actions. And, you know, eventually when LeBron comes back, LeBron's going to be getting to the rim or just drawing the eyes of multiple defenders. And then it's going to be D'Lo being able to play off the catch from there. And, you know, one of the limitations of D'Lo is just the rim pressure, period, from him. I think it's going to be a lot easier that he's playing off of someone that, one, can pressure the rim and draw that many eyes, but two, is willing to hit him and let him take advantage of those openings as well. So I think that's going to be fine. But I mostly enjoyed what he did offensively. Defensively, a little bit of a mess, but I don't think the matchup itself was pretty fair, very fair to him. So I just want to see a larger sample on that. Jared Vanderbilt is good at basketball. We saw it in Minnesota, saw it in Utah. First game in LA, the passing from him popped. Making dump offs, making kicks, keeping things going. Defensively, he's going to be able to defend multiple positions. And I think just his size in general is going to help this Lakers group. Just in terms of the matchups he's going to be able to handle, being able to help on the glass, and being able to operate as a helper. I always harp on what he did in Minnesota with them putting Cat at the level, having two on the ball, and him having to play cleanup duty on the back end. I think he's going to be able to do that in LA. Maybe not the same scheme, but he'll have that similar effect as another guy that can disrupt things at the rim if things go haywire at the point of attack, which when you look at what the Lakers personnel is at the point of attack, that may be an occurrence that's a little bit more frequent than people feel comfortable with. So having someone like Jared Vanderbilt to clean things up, I think is going to be pretty important. Stinks that Malik Beasley just didn't make shots in the debut. I imagine that he will be able to do that, but you already see hints of the movement element. You already see him coming off those curls. Doesn't have to be anything elaborate. He's just very good operating in space, very quick mover off the ball. So I think that's going to add an element to the Lakers offense that they've thoroughly been missing. And so important win for the Lakers over the weekend, considering the playoff/play-in chase that they're in right now. Mostly positive things to say about all three parties on the Laker front.
I think you nailed the majority of what I wanted to hit on. I did like their tempo with him and Dennis Schroeder in the lineup together. I felt like they were getting actions earlier. I wonder what that looks like when LeBron comes back or if that just helps. Maybe those possessions where LeBron doesn't have it to start. It does feel like there is better balance with their lineups, to your point, Now, what it looks like when LeBron's PTO is up is going to be interesting. But they have more size. They have more length. That's a good thing for a team that was forced or having to play those three guard lineups and hope they work out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, being able to flow to add some of those pieces, I think the bridge lineups, even when it's just AD towards the end of the first quarter, like it's good stuff there. Playing Malik Beasley and Lonnie Walker at the same time for some reason is hilarious to me.
Who's getting them up first?
So I guess offense isn't going to be a problem off the bench in that theory, but the movement sets is a big piece. And my only thought on Vanderbilt is I do wonder, because they did use him as a screener, are teams going to keep going with regular coverage on him? Are they going to keep mixing the switches in? What's the spacing look like after that? But he did a lot of good things as a roller, as a decision maker, as you stated. I just kind of want to see how it goes going forward.
My guess would be that he sees more of the switches. And if that happens, I am curious to see what the push and pull with his minutes are going to be with the Lakers. Because I do think the defense is going to be very important. But ultimately, part of getting Russ out of LA and getting these three role players is that in theory, you open up the floor a little bit more, mostly with Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell. But because Jared Vanderbilt can operate as a screener, and that's something that Russ wasn't being utilized as very often, the reasons for which, you know, we don't have to have that debate on why that didn't happen, but he wasn't an active screener in LA. You can at least get that for Vanderbilt. If he just becomes a switch, they're going to have to weigh how important the defense is going to be, because otherwise, I think the Lakers would just end up defaulting to, all right, LeBron's the four, AD's the five. We're going to have two shooters, and then it may be Dennis tonight. It may be Malik if he has the shot going. We just say, okay, we're just going to outscore you. So I'm going to keep an eye on that for sure. Other thoughts for me, these are probably be a little bit quicker. On the Boston front, Mike Muscala already showcasing the value as a spacer. I think shot 50% from three in the debut. He's continued to provide that gravity on the perimeter. I was a little bit curious with him just not getting minutes at the five, particularly in the Memphis game. And I wonder if that's just going to be the decision that they go with moving forward in terms of the rotations and the lineups that he's going to be in. I wonder if we do see any minutes of him at the five to really maximize what he brings as a pick and pop threat, or if they keep him paired to a Robert Williams or to an Al Horford, or if we see the double bench big lineup with him and Luke Kornet. Like, I wonder. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying that's what shocked me. When I saw them both on the floor, Luke Kornet and Mike Muscala, I was like, okay, is this just something to have, another piece in the back pocket, just in case, hey, we need to stay big, but we need shooting too? Like, how is that potentially going to work out? But he can shoot that thing.
That he can. I am worried about the defense of that particular front court. Like, I do understand the theory of, okay, we can play Mike and Rob well together, because Rob's going to be at the rim. We just hope Mike holds up enough in space, and then offensively, Rob is just going to attract so much attention as a roller, and Mike Muscala can just shoot the ball all over the place. So I get it. Him and Luke Kornet together, that very much felt like a let's see what it looks like type run of minutes in that game. But no, early thoughts there are pretty solid. Jakob Poeltl in Toronto is where my brow raises, because I expected him to be a stabilizing force on both ends of the floor. And I especially expected to see that on the defensive end. And it feels like through two games, and it's only two games, he's felt more of a stabilizer on offense than on defense. And that feels a little troublesome to me. It's been very active Jakob Poeltl defensively. In which case, I just wonder, not what the point is, because that's too strong. And I do think it's important that he's able to mix in those more aggressive coverages. But like, he's really good in drop. And part of the Raptors' issue defensively is just how aggressive they've been and how small the margin for error is and how crisp the rotations have to be. You bring in a really good drop defender. In theory, you can at least go conservative sometimes and ramp things down and kind of stabilize your defense. They went right to it in the Detroit game.
Now, Nikias, I'm going to ask a question. Okay. There's a lot of trust for a Toronto team that has a, wait, what are y'all doing? Possessions on defense. Remember, they were all small and couldn't switch and stayed aggressive. So what made you think they were just going to toggle all that down to a drop?
Because they actually have a 7-footer they can trust. And that's what my thinking, that's what my thought process was. Like, all right, this is a solidified, really good defender. It's been uneven in San Antonio this year, but we have years of evidence of Jakob being a really good rim protector, really good defender in drop. I thought this would give them license to dial it down some. Like, I didn't anticipate Toronto that they're just a drop team now. But in his minutes, I would imagine if he faces 10 pick and rolls, it's going to be 6 or 7 in drop. And then you mix in the rest. Like, I thought that would kind of be the distribution when he's on the floor. And the fact is just been like, nope, this is just what we do. It just felt like an odd way to use him, considering what his skill set is. But offensively, the screening already pops. They have needed someone, especially in light of just about everyone being the same size in the start lineup, they needed someone that could pry dudes open. And seeing some of the early Scotty Jakob pick and rolls, I was like, huh, this is interesting. Setting a lower on the floor, you empty a corner. He's angling it in a way that Scotty can still get downhill. That's interesting to me. The screens he set for Fred VanVleet, I've talked a little bit about the improved driving from him. Should be a little bit easier for him to generate paint touches if he's getting screens like that. The off-ball stuff, I'm going to be curious to see what that looks like. If they are running movement sets for Gary Trent Jr. when he's there, when he's back, those should be a little bit more fruitful with Jakob as a screener. Maybe the offense looks a little bit better in the half court with him in. If he's going to screen that well, if the passing is going to be there as well, like the spacing concerns, I think, lower in my mind. But I am keeping an eye on the defense because I just was not expecting it to be as aggressive as it's been with Jakob in so far.
Well, the one thing I will say with his defensive minutes is it may be them trying to just see, hey, does this work? What's this look like? And B, does it morph into, okay, he's closer to the level and he's working to contain the drive? If they can toggle that button and kind of get the best of both worlds, I think you get increased results and at least better consistency. Mm-hmm. I think the offensive points you hit are huge. Like, for me, it was just, oh, it's nice to see the Raptors, like, kind of get regular pick and roll coverage and have someone who can make them pay on the short roll or a post up on a roll, as opposed to, wait, what are we doing now?
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of connector pieces, so.
No, I'm right there with you. I think that's all I had on that front. I guess we just flow into, I guess, an abbreviated version of teams that have been pressed. I just want to give a quick shout out to Cleveland's offense with an offensive rating over 119 over the last 6 games, which they've won all 6 of those games. There have been some not so great opponents mixed into that, especially defensively, like the Detroit game. Yeah, they faced Indiana in the stretch. They faced Detroit in the stretch. But Chicago's been a good defense all year. New Orleans has been a good defense. Even before that, there was a 4-game stretch where they faced OKC, faced the Clippers, faced the Heat, faced the Grizzlies. And all 4 of those defenses have been good. And they had an offensive rating a little over 116 in those games. And that mark would be a top 5 mark in the NBA if extrapolated over the entire season. So we've talked a little bit about the pace concerns. So I won't hang there too long. But I just really enjoy like the reads they're making, even within the slower process that I would like. Darius Garland just has total command of what's happening on offense. You give him a sliver of space, he is pulling up. And he has been one of the best pull-up shooters in the NBA all year long. Donovan Mitchell, we haven't seen the 30-point pace yet. He's just getting back, so I'm not holding him to that standard. But his rim pressure has been very important. His pick-and-roll chemistry with Jared Allen in particular continues to be incredibly tough for defenses to deal with. You can't play drop against him. You can't switch. Jared Allen has been better at mashing those mismatches or just drawing extra help, and he can make passes from there. They're able to flow. The decision-making and the decisiveness from Evan Mobley continues to pop for me. And you really saw it in the New Orleans game in particular. It was easier to see just because New Orleans puts 2 on the ball in pick and roll, and you see Evan Mobley spaced if he isn't the screener there. But the amount of possessions, particularly in that first quarter, and this game got out of hand pretty early, but the amount of possessions where it's high pick and roll with Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland with Jared Allen screening. Weak side defender would peel in to tag Jared Allen on the roll. Evan Mobley's immediately cutting. Like, okay, that's where he is. I'm going to be open. Find me now. It's subtle. It may be simple just based on what the defensive scheme is and what the weak points are, but just how quickly he finds that space has been something that stood out to me all year long. Even in more conservative coverages, like the way he roams around the dunker spot, I forgot to drop the stat during the Cleveland episode that we did. But like Cleveland's above 1.1 points per possession on pick and rolls with Evan Mobley in the dunker spot, which very convoluted stat via Second Spectrum, but that's an elite mark. And it also just highlights, one, you got to deal with Donovan or Darius. Two, you got to deal with Jared Allen. And even if we do a good job there, we have this lanky big man with incredible touch that knows where to be. And if he gets the ball anywhere inside of 8 feet, he's liable to just push the sucker in. So that's been a lot of fun. Touched on a little bit earlier with Isaac Okoro, shooting 44% from three during the 6-game winning streak. Since taking over the starting job full-time on January 4th, so we got a 20-game sample here, shooting 48.1% from three. Around three attempts, so the volume isn't high. But this has been an extended stretch of good shooting for him. And all they need him to do is cash in the opportunities that he has. He doesn't have to carry the offense. Knock down the ones that they disrespect him on, provide the defense. Those are going to be positive minutes for him. Did you want to jump in?
No, I'm saying, so he's getting the Nekia stamp finally.
He's
got the size, he's got the length, he just didn't have the shot. Is this it?
Hey, man, if he keeps this up, we're well on our way. He's doing a good job. He's doing a bang-up job. But that's all I wanted to hit on the Cleveland front. Their offense has just been humming as of late.
No, and a quick addition, because you nailed a ton of it. I just think it's kind of like a culmination of everything they've been working through, especially that New Orleans game. I mean, you dropped 70-plus in the first half, but you saw quicker decisions. You know, you saw tempo, getting into stuff earlier. Now you can churn. You saw, like you said, when we switch, we go right to the post. If there's a flash there, we get it. Like there was decisiveness, which is where it's like, okay, this is what they're working towards. Half court, we can grind you. We can win different ways. We can pick you apart. We can make reads. We can hurt you this way, as well as just our defense is really good. So I think that's probably a positive stretch for them to be able to get some of the rewards from the work they attempted to put in offensively.
Good stuff. And if the offense feels like the bigger question mark for me is we look at them through like a playoff lens and how they're able to sort things out. And if they're going to score at this degree, like their ceiling obviously becomes a lot higher. It's been a lot of fun in Cleveland. Did you have any teams that you wanted to shout out, good sir?
Let's go ahead and salute the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Huh.
Just real quick.
What so for?
Three of their last four games, they scored 153, 133, and 138. Fourth in the league in points in the paint. And I just want to tell the world, the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to play together. They are going to drive the basketball. Over and over and over again. It's going to go from side to side. They're going to cut while they're doing it. They're going to keep working to find a gap. And you have to sustain defense. And if you don't, it's gonna get ugly. And so we have enough of a sample size to where this is not a team that gets rattled, I guess is my point. Even if they don't have the success, they still play their style. They still play their way. And that's going to get interesting in the second half of the season. Because usually younger teams around this time, you can kind of feel maybe the league's figuring them out or we're taking this away. It's tough because they have that team blend and they also have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander losing his mind on a nightly basis, which makes it a little interesting. These are the type of teams that are tough to deal with because it's the play outside of the play that does so much of the damage for them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you combine that, the screening, the backdoor cuts, the floor staying spaced, Shai playing at such a high level and his driving ability mixing in with what OKC likes to do anyways. So it's not like he's just bringing it up every time and staring at four defenders. He may get it at the end of a set. He may start it and the ball may come back to him. So he's getting it in different scenarios where teams are off balance. I think Giddey and Jalen Williams have really come along with their consistency, especially Giddey. He's found a way to play and drive with force, not just playmaking, but also finishing. Jalen Williams is fun, but he also looks confident in every scenario that he's been in. And everyone just kind of does their job whenever they're asked to. And they're active defensively. I'm not as high as most are, but they do play very hard. They will show bodies. They will attempt to recover. So there is definitely a brand of basketball being played in Oklahoma City.
You're never going to let that one go, huh?
No.
I see. Did you have anyone else to shout?
Quick hat tip to the Sixers. I thought it was a pretty good response after the Boston quote-unquote game. It was not the prettiest of back-to-backs, but you beat the Knicks, you beat the Nets. What I liked about it was the belief they had. They played with being down in both of those games, coming back, hanging around. And it's just been really fun to evolve and see the counters from James Harden and Joel Embiid as teams are still just like, hey, we're just going to stay in a drop. So I could say, if you want to go under, James Harden's going to drive. Now it's a rescreen, and that pocket pass has just been automatic. Like, James Harden just sees you have the hole right to Joel Embiid. He's either going to finish the drive or he's going to shoot it. We're going to play out of that. And I'm just intrigued by how they move going forward. Half court, it's going to be interesting. Can they find the right balance at all times? But at the very least, they found a belief that I didn't know they necessarily had at all times. So good for them.
Oh, and then a genuine good for them to cap things off. I am impressed. Let's move to the teams that make us think. I have two.
Uh-oh.
We can just bring this into just a big general conversation. Two teams making a playoff push. They are both in the East. They're in different portions of the standings, but both in the playoff race. Both of their offenses are bad. Both of their defenses are very good. I would like to talk about the Heat and the Bulls. The Heat on a three-game winning streak right now. The Bulls on a three-game losing streak. The offenses for both are so, they're tough to watch. The Heat grind through games. That's kind of what they want to do in general. They want to grind things out, especially defensively, force turnovers, get some easy ones that way. It just feels like so much work generating good looks sometimes for the Heat. And for the Bulls, there's a similar element, which I really don't get because it feels like the floor is a little bit more spaced in Chicago. But there's also just a lack of juice in their offense that feels odd, which brings me to the buyout market in which both teams have been linked to Russell Westbrook, to which I will pose to you and ask, who does Russ make the most sense for? Does he make sense for either of these teams?
Well, I think he makes sense for both. And I'm going to attempt to craft the argument right here.
Okay.
So for Chicago, you need a boost of energy. Russell Westbrook's going to give you that. You don't know what, unfortunately, the Lonzo thing, still don't have an answer for it. You have a chance to add Russell Westbrook. Billy Donovan coached him. I know this is very narrative heavy, but there are elements where this could work. There's not a lot of risk because your season's your season right now, and it's a buyout market deal. So if this pops and works, great. If not, .. We continue to shape where our next pivot is because, I mean, it's sunken cost at this time. You've already spent the money on these concert tickets. You either got to find someone to go or...
Not the Bulls calling Ticketmaster. That's tough.
They are the Andersons right now. So I think at the very least, it'd be interesting to see him as a threat. How would he be used? Can he get downhill? Would the drives be there? Does that pop a little bit more alongside the players that they have? Maybe that's a better fit in a way. Like, I know spacing, .. But I'm intrigued by it at the very least. Mm-hmm. Miami, I mean, I just, look, it's going to take a deep name for me not to trust them to work in Miami. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, we've seen it with they're shooting 80% on these type of moves over the last 5-6 years. Every time you think someone's cooked, they go to Miami and they start cooking. I remember what they were saying about Joe Johnson.
That's a deep cut for real. That man was ISO in the, what was it, game 7? Like, oh, they really got a lot of them. Huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the number one thing for me. And if you want to talk about getting in the paint, you can still do that. So maybe that will give you some juice. It'll help you in the transition. So if you're a team that's defensive oriented, maybe he'll get out and run, maybe finish. I can see it.
I feel you. Like, I think a lot of this just, I mean, naturally he's going to be a free agent. So like, this is going to boil down to what Russ wants and what he prioritizes. Does he want an opportunity to prove that he can still not even carry an offense, but can still be a primary driver of offense? Because if that is the primary motivation, and to be clear, like, I don't begrudge him for either side, but if that's the primary motivation, like, I think Chicago's going to make the most sense for him. You already alluded to the relationship that he has with Billy Donovan. And ultimately, the point guard spot is just open for them. With no Lonzo, like, Io's gotten the start. We've seen Io's got the start. We've seen Alex Caruso start. Like, Russ can just walk in and be the starting point guard if that's what he wants to do. And again, in theory, you have Zach LaVine flanking him. If you are driving and kicking to DeMar DeRozan, like, not a spacer, but he's someone that can abuse a tilted defense. And even if it isn't tilted, he can just pull up in your face. It doesn't matter. Pick and pop element with Nikola Vucevic. Like, you can kind of see how it can work. I would worry about the defense a little bit, but I can see how that would work. With Miami, I think Miami gives him the best opportunity to contribute to a firmly good team. I worry a little bit about, one, the spacing, but the spacing concern is going to be wherever he goes. But the spacing especially hurts here, considering where Jimmy Butler likes to operate and where Bam Adebayo likes to operate. And so I'm just curious like how effectively they could make that all work. And once you zoom out and look at just the collective shooting issues that Miami's had this year, they have good shooters on the roster that just haven't shot well. I think a lot of making that gamble would be determined by how confident they are that the shooting is just going to bounce back post All-Star break. And it may, but I just wonder what their comfort level is on that. And then just the lineups. How often does he play with Bam and Jimmy? And beyond that, even if he's coming off the bench, is it going to be him and Victor Oladipo off the bench together? What does that look like? I know what it can look like defensively. What does that look like offensively? Like, will he be able to, I guess, carry an effective second unit, depending on who he's flanked with?
Thought bubble when it comes to Miami. Do you think maybe having more wiggle room to do Russell Westbrook things could help him?
It could. Like, I feel like from Miami's perspective, this feels a lot more like just guard insurance, period. Mm. It's Lowry insurance because his season has been very uneven. It's Gabe Vincent insurance since beginning of the season was shaky. Now he's just knocking down everything and just taking over fourth quarters. It's absolutely Victor Oladipo insurance, who just has not played in a while at this point. But you're also hoping for Miami, you're also hoping that those guys are either bouncing back in terms of play or just flat out coming back. And so I do wonder just what the combinations will be there.
What about him as a screener?
When have we seen it? I think it can work, but it's multiple stops where he just hasn't really done that.
You made me go to the archives. You don't even follow me, dog.
What you mean?
You thought I was feeling you? All right, dog.
What you mean?
Don't worry about it.
What does that even mean? You know what? But anyway, that's kind of where I am with the teams that are making me think. Two teams that should have done something, I think, at the trade deadline. Miami did make a deadline week trade with the Dedmon deal to clear up some room underneath the luxury tax, in theory, to make a buyout signing like this. So we will see if it's made. Chicago quite literally made no move, which was curious to me. That was just curious to me. Because I think, like, we've had a discussion about where I think they should go direction-wise. But even if you feel good about where the East is in light of like the KD trade and the Kyrie trade, et cetera, if you feel confident, why would you not try to shore up something in your rotation? Like, I think that's what gives. I don't understand feeling good about the group considering where they are, or at the very least, just not wanting to tear things down again. But then you just let it sit. And like, Orlando has their protected first, so it's not even like it's the same upside. Like, if it doesn't work, then fine, we'll just draft eighth. Because we don't know that.
I wonder how much of it is just having pieces that, okay, if this don't work, we can at least make a move with some thought process behind it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Spitballing here.
Absolutely. Again, this is why Chicago just kind of confuses me right now. But it's fine. Did you have any teams before you move to the next section?
Nope.
All right. Well, then, we can get to some players that have been pressed as of late. I guess I will kick this off as well. We'll start with Jalen Brunson, who continues to ball out. All-star caliber season for him. In February, averaging 31.7 assists, shooting 52% from three on five attempts, getting to the line nine times a game, draining 81% of those, shooting nearly 6% on twos during this stretch. It has been... He's so good. He's been so much better than I thought he would be. And I thought he was going to be good in New York. Like, my upside for him was like, okay, he can have like a, you know, we do our all-star talk and it's like, okay, here are the surefire guys. Here are the honorable mentions. Here's the tier like right below that. Like, I figured he would get there. And I think that would have been fine. he's been darn near elite over the last month of games. Over his last 20, he's almost averaging 30 points a game. So I don't, he's just very good. I want to give him a shout. Cam Thomas, got to give him a shout out. That man was getting buckets. He's been firmly in Brooklyn's rotation since January 30th. That gives us a 7-game sample size. Over the past 7 games, 29.7 points per game, 4 boards, 3 assists, 44% from 3 on 6 attempts, got to the line 8 times, converting nearly 92% of those. He had 3 starts during the 7-game stretch, 47 against the Clippers, 43 against the Suns, 26-4 against Chicago. And he did it however you asked him to. Isolated, efficient, coming off handoffs, did the thing, pick and roll, can get to the pull up, can get downhill and get to the line as well. Not too much on the passing portion. I think the next evolution of his game, at least offensively, is very much going to be moving the ball, making quicker decisions there. Something that I tweeted about during his hot stretch was like, it hasn't all been great, but it is kind of cool seeing him get two on the ball sometimes just to see how he handles that. Because I do think those are important. Like, that's important growth for him. Those important reps to get. But even if he doesn't handle it well, if the scoring proves to be real on a high scale, and he continues to get minutes, like, I do think he will see some teams where it's like, all right, or if he's just leading a second unit, defenses may just throw to it, ball him, right? Just trap him just to get it out of his hands. He has to get better at that. So it's encouraging that he was already getting those reps, even if that didn't always go well. So I wanted to give a quick shout to Cam Thomas and the run he had with Brooklyn. Going to cap it with some KJ Martin love. Career year for him. 12 points a game, 6 boards, 2 assists. Averaging 14 points and 8 boards since becoming a full-time starter midway January. That's about 15 games, so 14 and 8 there. Very efficient from the field, shooting nearly 37% from 3 during that stretch. Isn't high volume. It is a lot of stuff coming from the corners. I think he's a little ways away from drawing, like, aggressive help or aggressive closeouts on the perimeter. But if he can make teams think about it, like, that's going to open up some drives and more dunks on the head tops of defenders. And I just love the way he's deployed defensively. That Houston defense overall is a mess. But when he comes in, if he's paired with some of the athletes on Houston's second unit, you get to see like what he really looks like, especially as someone that can operate on the back line and can provide some secondary rim protection for you. He's just having a good year in the midst of a lot of chaos in Houston. So thought he deserves some love. Who'd you have on your list, good sir?
Man, LeBron James is the NBA's all-time leading scorer, and Klay Thompson has made 43 three-pointers in his last 8 games. Do you have free throws?
I do indeed have free throws. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll knock mine out of the way early. What was your favorite portion of the Super Bowl halftime show?
Yes.
All righty. who will give better minutes?
Diamond, come on.
Okay, there we go. All right. Who's going to give better minutes to close out the season? Dwayne Dedman or Gorgui Dieng?
A better what?
Better minutes.
Better minutes or minutes?
who is going to perform the best when they are on the court to close out the 2022-23 season?
Is there an option C?
Ah, I see.
Gorgui? Related.
you didn't feel good about that at all. was the impending Dedman signing, does that help explain why Montrez was so upset the other day?
Yes.
Ah, I see. Bigger Murray beef, Bones with Jamal or Paolo with DeJounte?
Bones.
Okay. Better MVP case, Giannis or Embiid?
Ooh. Depends on what day it is.
Ah, I see.
I had Embiid too, so I'll just stick with Embiid.
Okay. Which fan base is lower on their coach, the Raptors or the Lakers?
The Lakers. That escalated quickly. That man just got there. And maybe they're just louder. It seems like he has more wiggle room in Toronto.
We'll table that one. RJ Barrett or Jordan Poole?
Jordan Poole.
Okay. The Spurs have lost 12 straight. The next 3 opponents are they're at Cleveland, they're at Charlotte, and they're at Dallas post All-Star break. Does it get to 15?
I'm going to go with they lost to the Pistons 138-131. So I'm going to go with yes.
Ah,
I believe the email has been sent.
Not the email. All right, last one for me. Gonna run it back. Bam Adebayo or Domantas Sabonis?
Why do you keep running this one back?
I want to check in.
Why?
Bam's been very good, and the Kings have been a very enjoyable watch for you. And Sabonis has also been good. Okay. Do you have free throws?
I do. The Orlando Magic just signed Goga Bitadze. How funny is it to trade Mo Bamba and then sign Goga?
My immediate thought is why? I don't get that one. I'm going to be honest, but fine. Naturally, the Magic need big man depth. Yeah, go ahead.
What happens if there's a world where Russ just wants to play in Utah?
Is that mutual, I guess, is the question.
No. He just shows up and is like, I want to play.
It'll be a whole lot of shoulder nudge. Oh, I ain't know yet. And I guess.
I just think, I don't know. I like, obviously, the buyout is the likely conclusion, but I just think it'd be funny if Russ is like, nah, I'll play.
And I'm giving up money?
Are Dwayne Dedman and Serge Ibaka the same thing?
Mountain Dew, Mountain Lightning.
Who do you believe in more for Miami, Russell Westbrook or Serge Ibaka?
Oh, God. It's probably Russ. At least he's shown he can do things on the court over the past year.
Okay. Mo Bamba says he calls LeBron and Anthony Davis 3-6 Mafia. How quickly do you think he's asked to stop calling them that?
Oh, no. Like, it's not bad, but, like, since it's coming from him, I'm sure it's going to be a, hey, bro, I feel you, but also.
Who does it?
See, this is funny because, like, AD doesn't strike me as that guy. And I also don't know if LeBron's going to talk to him. So I don't.
Reports, NBC wants to get back in the NBA business. Were you alive when the NBA was on NBC?
Wow. What a shot. Let's say yes, but wow. You proud of that?
No. How done were the Warriors with James Wiseman?
Yes. Well, I guess I can't say yes, because they held on as long as they could.
But ..
However, comma.
Let's see. Ooh, this is a good one. Is LeBron going super hard at work on Tuesday and then taking an extended vacation the most relatable thing he's ever done?
I think the most relatable thing is probably just the general embellishment sometimes, but yes, for the purposes of this question.
Wow, what a shot. Man said the son of the Super Bowl and All-Star and said, bet. Who had the better opinion of Philadelphia, Jabari Smith Jr. or Rasheed Wallace?
Wow. Oh, I feel like the answer is yes here.
Okay.
I think she did pick the Chiefs to win, and they did.
He's a big KC fan.
Yeah.
And Jabari was just yelling at people.
Yeah, Jabari, like, go to sleep, bro. Man, I said, I got Embiid tomorrow. I respect that. I really respect that.
The funny part is he does it. Turn this game on. Let's see who he's guarding right now. What is tougher, scary hours or unseen freaky hours?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's got to be the latter, right? Like, scary hours imploded. We ain't seen this level of. It's literally unforeseen. I don't, you know.
What's funnier? Glizzy gone or unseen freaky hours?
I mean, technically. gonna leave that one alone.
Okay. Can you just keep it on track? Can you confirm the rumors that the halftime performance of the big game had the Holston brand in shambles?
Look, man, it's Rihanna. I don't know what you're talking about. Hey, you know what?
Oh, they're with SpongeBob. Anyways, that's all I got.
Oh, man, that is a woman. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Darkest Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. please join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you have not already. We're having fun discussions in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties if you haven't gotten the ability to do so. We are having a blast. Plenty of analysis, plenty of antics. Normally have the link in the description of the pod, so you just copy and paste that one into your browser to get that to go. Come hang with us, watch some hoops with us, and have some fun. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
This man is selling wristbands.